Is your family a success?
Is there even a measure for family success?
We think there is. And with a 20-year track record of success, we're going to show you how to bless your family with success in your health, relationships, and finances. I'm Steve Keen.
And I'm Katie Keen. And along with some awesome guests, we are going to give you our secrets to family success. Welcome to Family Success Secrets.
Hey, hey, welcome back to the last day. It's Friday. It's the Family First Entrepreneurship Week. We are wrapping up this week. I hope that you have really just been able to dive in and think about, you know, that just the whole work-life balance and really thinking about your family first. They need to be the number one priority. I know entrepreneurship can be very demanding. It's very demanding, but we have to keep this top of mind. And I'm excited to really cap this week off with special guests, Steve and Katie Keen. We are going to be talking about how to be successful in the home with your family, with your kids. I know a lot of my listeners have children. Many of them actually, I think, have young children from what I've seen in my observations. So I'm one of those. I have two kids that are 4 and 7. So I certainly understand the struggle sometimes when it comes to keeping balance and keeping your family first and being able to find ways and different, you know, we're going to be talking about systems and things like that that can really help you have more harmony in the home and still be a rock star in your business. So without further ado, I welcome to the show Steve and Katie Keen. How are you doing today?
We are great. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Well, it's good to see you. And, you know, so we've known each other for some time now in internet years. It's been like a decade.
Internet years. Okay.
Yeah, I know. You'll hear me crack that little joke there, you know. Oh, I forgot. I put my little, there we go. Boom. My little snare drum there. So yeah, internet years. It's funny because it's just things when you're online just go so much faster than real world. And, but, you know, I've really been, you know, just fascinated with your journey and your heart to serve and just your story too. Like I want to start there and talk about your story as far as a family, how things kind of got started that led you into what you're doing today and helping other families succeed.
Sure. Absolutely. So I guess we'll have to try to tell our story quickly because it's a very long story, but almost 17 years ago, our first child was born with a stroke and that just completely pivoted our life from what we thought it was going to be to what it was supposed to be. And it gave us the beginnings of a whole new perspective and set us into a community that we would never have expected to become a part of, you know. So we ended up having 5 children over the course of a military career where we were moving every 23 months. So along with deployments, a lot of family separation, we were also having kids, packing and unpacking, and at the same time discovering quite a few significant special needs among the children. So we learned a lot of lessons through a lot of pressure and a lot of unexpected circumstances, a lot of trial and some hardship. But it's really worked out that we have learned a lot of things that now we can turn around and share with other people and hopefully save them the trouble.
Mm. Yeah, that's beautiful. It's definitely, you know, knowing that you have 5 kids and being in special needs parenting or being special needs parents, I could only imagine the challenges because you have so many more things to keep up with, right? You know, I have 2 kids and we were talking before the interview. It's like, you know, I've got 2 kids and I feel, you know, out of my mind busy with 2. I couldn't imagine having 5 and then throwing kind of the special needs thing in there too, that you have to keep up with. So like, what do you do to come together as a team? Because I think if you're not coming together as a team, this thing's going to implode. And what are some of the things that you guys do that really just help glue it together and make the bond strong?
Well, we have to be quite intentional about everything that we do. So there's a lot of planning between Katie and I. There's a lot of planning / discussions with the children. And I mean, all 5 of them, all in the room with us at the same time. And so it's a family meeting type of thing. So we have to be quite intentional and we have to make good plans that are realistic. And we have a number of systems that we use that allow us to execute those sorts of things. The intentionality is where it starts up.
And I think too, to follow up on that, when he talks about intention, there's also an emotional relation level where I look to see with him, or he looks to see with me, what was the intent behind an action? So if we're having a bad day, you know, and maybe I'm having a really grumpy day, he doesn't just say, oh, she's so horrible. You know, maybe he feels like that, but he looks past that to the intent of what's going on with me. Why am I suddenly having this reaction? He knows my heart is good and invested in our family and invested in our relationship. And so we try to give each other a lot of the benefit of the doubt and look to the intent of what the person is trying to actually achieve versus going to battle with each other. And with our children as well, we provide a united front. So we do not disagree with one another in front of the children. If we have something that we don't agree upon, we take that to where we are alone and we discuss it and come to a conclusion where we've compromised or come to whatever agreement and continue to present a united front in front of the children, even if we've changed our minds. That's really important to set the tone.
Yeah, that's great. I want to ask you, going kind of rewinding back to the first part of that explanation, you had mentioned that you and the children all get together and have a discussion, right? Just to clarify for the audience, would you mind sharing, what are the ages of your children?
So our youngest is 6 and our oldest is almost 17. And so we have a 7, but no, he's 8. He's 8 now.
Yeah, 6 years old.
Sorry,
8 years
just
old.
Had a birthday a couple of days ago. I'm so used to saying 7. So 6, 8, 11, 15, mm-hmm. and almost 17.
Yeah, and it's been a part of our family culture. It's part of just how we do things. They are on our team, so we function as a team.
And we've been doing this for a long time. Those meetings, we didn't wait until they got to a certain age, right? If they can sit still, they're... Well, even if they can't sit still, one of the bigger ones will hold them still. But they're all
give them a toy truck or something.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you, because the thing that's really cool about that is you've got age range. You got such a wide range of age, right? From 6 all the way up to your age, and you know whatever that is, right? Adulthood, 6 to adulthood, right? And everything in between. So, how do you? I guess the thing that's like a big gap is like, how do you get everybody on the same page? What's discussed during these meetings specifically?
Well, it can be a really broad range. I mean, it depends on what's happening with our family. It depends on what's coming up. Sometimes it can be as simple as just checking in with them. How are you guys doing? You know, what's on your mind? It can be something like, here's what's going to happen next, or here is what's coming up this week, or here's how you need to behave during the situation, because we want them to always be prepared. Someone who hasn't learned something shouldn't get in trouble if they didn't know. So we try to keep them informed ahead of time so that they have the preparation they need to handle different circumstances in life. The meetings really are a very wide topic range. I mean, they really just encompass what's relevant in our life. And part of us learning to do that came from homeschooling as well, because when I'm trying to teach various levels of school all at one time in one home on one day, you learn how to include and manage all the different learning styles and ages at the same time. And it's very doable, very enjoyable, and it really creates a team.
Interesting. That is interesting. I guess my kids are 4 and 7, and I'm trying to think about being able to do that at once. And in my mind, I almost feel like I need to be a fly on the wall during these family meetings and just really hear what's going on. Cause I think it's pretty cool that y'all do that. And just the way that you operate as a unit is also something, there's something to be said about that. And I know, you know, this podcast specifically is about, you know, business and how we can succeed in business and lifestyle design and just the whole entrepreneurship thing. But I think there's a strong parallel between that and what you're doing in the home. So let's talk about, you have this home economy concept. And I want to kind of tee you up here because we were talking about it before. And I think this is the coolest thing ever. And I want you to give some explanation as to this home economy that you've developed in your home and how this works.
So we have two systems in our house that pretty closely mirror what a person will find when they leave their home and when they achieve adulthood, or let's say they go out to college, whatever the case is, right? One is the law and one is the home economy. And I know Katie wants to talk about the home economy there, so I'll cover the law afterwards. But they mirror what you're going to find outside of the house. So if we do those sorts of things inside of our home, they're well used to them, well adjusted and prepared for life outside of the home. So yeah. Go ahead with the home economy.
So the home economy is all sort of based on our system of law, which Steve will explain. But in our home economy, it's a replication of what a government would do. So we've established a law, set of laws, we've agreed upon them, we've posted them before, we've had a meeting about it, we've posted them before they're going into action, before they're enforced. Along with those, there is a set of circumstances, that consequences essentially, that everyone in the family knows are what will happen consistently. Just like you speed, you get a ticket. So it removes a lot of emotion. It removes a lot of frustration for the parents. It removes blaming from the children, you know, to the parents. Oh, it's your fault, mom. You got me in trouble. Nope. Sorry, kiddo. It's the law and you broke it. So here's your ticket, you know? And from there, then every person also understands essentially their job inside of our economy. The kids can be assigned maybe various territories or various chores. And in our home as well, various school assignments that have to be done every day. And for those, they are then awarded a certain amount, very similar to going to work. So they know every day how much they have an opportunity to earn. And you can have a fine as part of our economy if you don't do it. But you also have the opportunity to buy luxuries and privileges if you are earning and saving. And so it really works nicely because it does take away a lot of that emotion. It teaches the child that they are not entitled, brings in a sense of accomplishment for the child. It gives a real respect for the child, and it helps the child learn to respect the parent as well. So it's really nice. It's very comprehensive. And it's something actually that once they learn it, like we use checklists for it when we're training them, and the checklists are very nice to have as a support, but you can almost, they get so used to it, you can almost fall away from the checklists at times for a period of time because it just becomes your norm. It becomes the way you function. For our family, it is what helped to sustain this new undertaking of trying to establish a podcast and a business because we weren't having to in any way do a lot of control or oversight. I mean, our kids know what's expected. Of course, we check in. We are, you know, we disciple them as far as, you know, we leadership, we're there for them. They know that they can come to us with any questions, but they already understand their role in our family economy and they understand what will happen if they don't fulfill it. And it's very natural. So the rest, it works great.
When did you start doing this home economy concept?
It really developed over the last 17 years. It didn't really clarify for us as to being as developed as I just explained until really the last three to four years. But we began early on when the children were young, and really your kids are the perfect age to begin something like this. And we began just with a couple of different systems that we used that helped them understand their responsibilities in the house and awarded them. And so they could feel very confident, you know, at their own level of development and be praised for it and be respected for it. And it really made them feel valued inside of the family for the work that they would put in. And it helped them celebrate work, not despise work, and really help begin that foundation for that team mentality in the family.
Yeah, the reason I was, and that's great. I'm completely on board with what you're saying, especially it encourages them to, you know, love work versus, you know, hate work, or the whole entitlement thing. Pretty much you can smash that with this home economy concept. And it just sounds like it keeps the glue together between the family. Everybody knows their roles. Everybody, it's just very organized. All of it's beautiful. But the reason I was asking about when you got started, because I was curious to know when you really started developing this, what were some of, like, how long, first question is, how long does it take for somebody to take this like home economy concept and kind of get it moving in their family?
They could be in a number of weeks an improvement, and it doesn't really matter what age your kids are once you've established it. Steve should explain the laws to you. I think that will help.
Yeah, let's hear the laws.
So the laws, they're very simple. I think we have five overarching laws that we have in our home.
Yeah, and each family's would be unique to them.
And so they're posted, they're agreed upon so that everybody knows these are our family's laws, right? And if there's an infraction of the law, then the associated parties will report to the door and we'll go through them. And I try to make it fun, right? So that it doesn't feel quite so penalized, but
we have them posted on our front door. That's why he says, go to the door. We meet there in that neutral space of our front door area where they're posted.
But they're posted on the inside of the door. They're not on the outside. No. So like the UPS guy comes up, he's like, oh my gosh, I got to abide by all this. You're like, no, this is for us. The laws are posted on the inside of the door.
Yeah.
So they're there so that everyone knows where they are, right? And they pass by them every single day.
Yeah.
And anytime there's an infraction, of course, we go back and we take a look at them and review them, talk about them. What'd you do wrong? What could you do better next time? That type of thing.
And we have to abide by them too, which is really important here. You know, if one of the laws is that you're going to treat others with love and no yelling, for example, those are two of our laws, and I lose it and I yell at the kids, and I wasn't treating them with love. And love doesn't mean that I can't be direct and firm with them, but I have to apologize too. Like, it's my law too. I have to abide by it as well. And that's why I say, you know, when you have that family conversation and you create these laws as a family with the parents as leaders, then it can work for any family at any stage. It's just a matter of consistency. And then the parents trying to continue a joyful attitude while they implement it, because that sets the tone for the entire thing.
So what's like, describe to me, if you break one of the laws, what would be an example of an infraction? So Steve breaks a law, right? What's his punishment?
Well, Steve broke a law, of course. You know, he's in the doghouse. No, I'm kidding.
Thank you.
So if either one of us loses our cool and yells at the kids, for example, not only do we have to absolutely apologize, but, you know, the parents need a cool off time just like the kids. So it's a timeout. I mean, you separate till you calm down, and then you apologize, you make it right, talk about it, then we all forgive each other. So we really work hard to reconcile. And we actually have systems where we help teach our children the proper ways to reconcile as well. That's very hard in families. Siblings tend to fight a lot. And, you know, it's a training ground for conflict resolution. So when we break a law, we don't just see it like it's a horrible, horrible thing. It's actually an opportunity for training for real life, even though it might feel frustrating. You know, it's like, oh, good grief, you know, again, like we have to solve this again. But we have to get over that because our home is a training ground. And so it's not just a frustration. It's also an opportunity to build into our kids for their lifelong library of what they will need to do as adults when we are not there. That can set them up for success and a whole lot less trouble in their adult life.
Yeah, that's great. And having, I like the way you described the infraction consequences, so to speak, right? It's not like, well, Steve, you're going to have to go sleep in the garage tonight.
No.
And there's actually some productive, you know, development, you know, that happens through not following the law of the home. So I got another follow-up question for you. Have you seen, because you said you've been doing this for 17 years, but really the past 3 to 4 is when it's really developed. And knowing that your children are, you know, between 6 and 17, you got this wide range. What kind of changes have you seen in your children since you've really like put this into place, as far as like things, have there been any noticeable changes within your children now that you've really put this in place? And if so, like, what would that look like?
You have very noticeable things when they're posted and they're agreed upon, because there's no uncertainty as to that being the way that it's going to be, right? If let's say 10 years ago, we'd say, now, you know, we don't do such and such thing in our house, or we don't treat somebody like that. You know, well, kid may remember that for a short time, but 3 weeks later, a month later, is a 4-year-old or 8-year-old going to remember everything that you've ever talked about? Well, not as much. But when you put them up and they're posted, well, first, when they're agreed upon, that means they've all bought into it and they say, yes, this is good. Then when it's posted, there's no forgetting it. And so that, I didn't know, or I forgot, that's gone, right? That's over with. And so you have a sort of immediacy with the implementation of it, or the expectation that it's going to be obeyed.
It reduces the arguing, the, like he said, the I forgot. So there's a lot less tension. And so some of that is stuff that we've noticed, as well as independence. Our children's independence, once we implemented this in this clarified way, became skyrocketed. So we reduced the arguing and complaining. We increased the independence and the self-sufficiency. And now everybody's happier.
Yeah. I mean, especially, I like how you said that you agree, everybody buys into it first. Mm-hmm. It's not this, you know, hey, by the way, these are the laws and nobody had any part of it. And again, there's another parallel between this and business, because when it comes to business and it comes to policies or processes or rules, whatever, you know, those things that kind of create the boundaries in the company, if you have your team develop that with you and kind of make them part of the process and they buy into it, they're far more likely to not only follow them, but also respect them and not try to, you know, because I would imagine that when it comes to just the integrity in the home, it's probably a lot stronger when everybody buys into it first.
Absolutely. And, you know, we still are the leaders of the home and we are the boundary makers and the boundary keepers. But by allowing them the respect, giving them the respect of having their input, having their feedback, and making sure that they feel very heard and very understood throughout that process, and maybe even adding a law or two that, you know, a four-year-old might come up with something silly, like, you know, don't ever feed the goldfish. That's okay. Add it in. Give them that respect that they feel a part of making those home laws. And it really does help, like you said.
So how does somebody get started in, like, if they want to build this home economy?
It's really easy. You have to think about, well, who do we have in our kids, their age groups, their abilities, what are they going to be able to do? And you have to come up with a set of things that they are going to be able to accomplish that is appropriate for either their age or their ability. I'll just say ability level.
You could call it chores, and they can be facilitated. Our disabled son, we help him do those activities.
Right. So you would have that. And then you have to think of, and this is the harder part, is trying to think of, okay, what are we going to say that is worth? And then what is the consequence of not doing it? Well, the consequence of not doing something in the home economy is that you don't get paid for it. So what we did is we made it very simple. We said, okay, in the course of the day, kids are going to eat this many meals. We're going to provide this much transportation. We provide all the utilities and all of these different stuff. And we're going to say that is worth 81 points, right? All of the stuff that we pay for out of our pocket has a cost to you of 81 points. But we're going to make your day structured so that by doing your chores, doing your schoolwork, helping out, whatever the case, you're going to earn 100 points. So you have the possibilities of 19 points worth of profit each day. Okay. And then what if you don't do said action, whichever one of it is, then you don't earn the associated points. So if a kid's job that day was to vacuum, they don't do it, then okay, you don't earn those 5 points. And so now you only earn 14 additional mm-hmm. points if you did everything else correctly.
Which means purchasing less luxuries.
Right.
And they may want to watch TV or have, you know, candy.
So they don't have the ability to accumulate the additional points on top of it, which means when it comes time for a family treat or something like that and they can't buy into it, then, well, you effectively chose not to. And by having them have to earn enough for, I'll just say, their not their keep, but right, to pay for those things that mom and dad pay for in real life, the utilities and transportation and stuff like that, that is what helps to remove the entitlement mentality. Because if they think, well, I'm here, I'm your kid, therefore I automatically deserve to have a roof over my head, to have clothes, to have food, to have heat. And all of that is true, but we're training them to be able to provide for themselves those services and those things that they want for when they are not under our care. So absolutely, we provide all of those things
absolutely.
To them.
No
and if
what.
The whole thing was a shipwreck, we'd figure out a different way to do it. They would never go without any of those things. But we have built it in such a way that now they know they are responsible, mm-hmm. let's say, for earning their keep in that way. and they can earn some additional on top of it, so that if they want to rent a movie or something like that, okay.
You can. It gives them freedom, too.
That's a couple points.
And actually, we did uncover in one of our children a significant entitlement mentality that we didn't know was there. She was horrified that she had to pay for her food. She couldn't believe it. And we figured out it was because she felt that since she had a special needs brother, she shouldn't have to. So that led to some good real world conversation that came to a wonderful conclusion and a much deeper understanding of life as a whole. And, you know, she and all of them feel very proud when they have saved up enough to get something they really want. And it gives us the opportunity not to have to say no so much. You know, we can say yes. Oh, you earned it. And we can celebrate with them. And when they don't make it, instead of being like, well, we told you, we can grieve with them and say, oh man, like that's such a bummer. We're so sorry, but we know you're going to get it next time. And how can we help you? You know, and so it really does eliminate a lot of that tension, and it really does enhance that team unity.
Yeah. It's not like it's not us versus you, you know, right. we're here, we're holding your points hostage and
exactly.
Yeah.
It's a positive.
And the double benefit there is one, they leave our house one day with an understanding that they need to be able to provide for themselves. Mm-hmm. They are their own responsibility. So if you want utilities, you better earn the money to pay for them. Yeah. But then at the same time, they've also learned, well, here's how I take care of my home. Here's how I make sure that I'm cooking well-balanced meals and, you know, that type of stuff.
And they've learned how to budget in the meantime, because in that system, we fixed in how to save so that they would have a savings. And out of every paycheck, they get a certain percentage of savings, as well as what they have for luxuries, you know? So it's meant to actually be a really simple, loving training ground for them, an opportunity where they're just completely loved and they can feel that, and they can feel our support while they learn real life lessons. So they don't get out there in the world, get a credit card, suddenly find themselves in massive debt, not know what to do.
Now, as far as tracking the points, is this something that you have displayed in the home where everybody can kind of see like where they're at? Is it like a weekly, they roll over? I got so many questions about this. This is like,
that's fine. We actually created charts that guide them through their days that have the points assigned to what each activity is valued at. And then I just made a week of charts for each kid. At one point, we, before COVID, needed to tailor those to what each day was happening in the day. We didn't want them ever penalized because we had something out of the house and they couldn't complete what was on their chart. So we tailored that chart to that. Now that we're home most of the time because of COVID, it's more standard, but each child has the opportunity with a little clipboard, a pencil, they just check it off and then they submit that. And it's very automated at this point because everyone kind of knows really what all that's worth. And then I just track it and have a little notebook, write it down.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love this. This is just having that kind of structure in your home, and especially the way that you really tied in kind of the economy and the laws. And because the thing is that when they grow up, when they get out of home, that is what it is. There are laws and there is an economy that you have to live in. So it sounds like a really strong way of kind of segueing your children into real life that a lot of kids are just missing right now. And a lot of parents probably just aren't aware this kind of a solution or this way of really approaching the home. So very cool. Very, very cool. Anybody who's looking to really bring that to their home, you know, definitely go back and listen to this episode again, because I think there was definitely a lot of gold here, and y'all shared so much in terms of especially this home economy concept and how that works. I think it's a beautiful way to, you know, create that training ground, as you call, for your children, being able to help them learn about things that are really parallel to the real world, especially, you know, it sounds like a great way of eliminating a lot of entitlement. You probably will see a lot of entitlement emerge, you know, as you start, especially, I'm sure if you start the system, I definitely want to get on something like this, because we do not have that in the Anderson home right now. And we need to have something like this in the home. And anybody listening, if you don't have at this moment, I would highly recommend that you consider that as well. So thank you so much for being here and being part of the podcast. It was amazing having both of you here. Y'all are just beautiful people and I love what you're doing. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks, Derek. A lot of fun.
Thanks for listening and spending time with us today. If you know anyone who could benefit from this podcast, We would be honored if you would share it. Please rate, review, subscribe, and download.
Head over to podcast.familysuccesssecrets.com to have a top-rated family success secret sent straight to your inbox. We look forward to spending time with you again next week during our next episode. See you then.
Bye, everyone.